In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
On today's I Spy Radio Show, we are celebrating the military. With all the picnics and parades and get-togethers this Memorial Day weekend, let's remember that it's the brave men and women of our military who help make all of that possible. We'll be talking with best-selling author Scott McEwen. He was the co-author of American Sniper along with Chris Kyle, and he is the author of the Sniper Elite series featuring Gil Shannon. And his latest book, The Sniper and the Wolf, just hit bookshelves. There's probably no greater fan of the military than Scott, so we'll be talking with him about his book, get some news on the movie spinoff, and we'll get his thoughts on some current events like the fall of Ramadi and some news leaking out about what the Obama administration really knew about Benghazi. Stick around for that. First up, we're going to lay the foundation for why we need to have the military. Now, Obama might think that the greatest threat, aside from his policies, of course, that the greatest threat to our military is global warming. But real military planners know about a much more realistic and real threat, an EMP strike. An EMP, or electromagnetic pulse, can be generated in several ways, but the widest effects are caused by high-altitude nuclear blast. An EMP creates a burst of gamma radiation that strips away electrons from atoms in the atmosphere and overloads and destroys electrical systems, totally wiping them out. A blast centered over San Francisco, only 30 miles high, would wipe out electrical systems 480 miles in all directions. That's from Tijuana, Mexico, just south of San Diego, all the way north of Corvallis, Oregon. A blast 300 miles high over the middle of the United States would wipe out all electronics in the lower 48, suddenly throwing civilization back to the early 1800s. As scary as that sounds, this is very real. And to talk about EMPs, I'd like to welcome Dr. Gerard Lemiro. You know, we've had you on before, and it is good to talk to you again.
It's great to be with you, Mark.
Yeah, and I'd just like to mention real quick that you're an author, philosopher, economist, and engineer. You're the author of Renewing America and Its Heritage of Freedom, America's Economic War, and Choosing the Good Life. You hold a PhD in mechanical engineering, and also earlier in your career, you were the worldwide president of the Association of Energy Engineers. As I said in the opening there, I described basically what an EMP is, but due to its increasing use of EMPs in films such as The Matrix or even Ocean's 11, the remake there with George Clooney, I think more people are at least familiar with an EMP. But an EMP is neither science fiction nor new technology, is it?
No, not at all. And the military is taking it very seriously. To show that the military is taking it seriously, the North American Aerospace Defense Command, better known as NORAD, located in Colorado Springs, has decided to move back into their old headquarters during the Cold War, which is Cheyenne Mountain, which, by the way, is EMP hardened. So they're taking it very seriously.
Well, in terms of an EMP itself, does the warhead itself needed to generate an EMP, does that need to be nuclear to do significant widespread damage, or are there other means to generate an EMP?
Well, I think the concern in the Pentagon is not about small little weapons that might damage a small area, you know, like, for example, a city-wide weapon. I think they're mostly interested in a nuclear bomb that's placed on a missile that's detonated about 200 miles over the center of the United States. And if you do something like that, you know, with one weapon, one missile, you wipe out the entire electric power grid of the United States. And that is a serious thing because that affects everything we do, runs on electricity.
And not just what we do, but so much of our economy as well is tied to the electrical grid. And we'll come back to that in a little bit. But in terms of understanding the EMP itself, how big of a warhead really is needed to do this kind of infrastructure damage? I mean, are we talking like a megaton bomb, or are we talking something fairly small?
Are you talking about like on a national level?
Yeah.
A national level attack?
Yeah.
A relatively small weapon would do it if it's done at the right level. It really has to do with the altitude of the weapon, where the pulse is going to extend to. The pulse is basically this wave of energy that just within less than a second wipes out whatever's in its path. Let me give you an example that most people don't talk about, but I do. And that is, at any given time over the United States, there are lots of jet planes flying from here to there and all over the place. And in fact, at any given time, there's up to about 500,000 people flying in the skies over mainland U.S. Now, within a second of such an attack, an EMP, electromagnetic pulse attack, all the electronics in all those planes would be fried in less than a second. All those planes would lose control, because even manual controls have electrical circuits associated with them, and there's nothing that isn't electronic or chip-based or just electronic in general. So you would have planes flying out of the sky that just started falling. Some of them might glide a little bit, but you'd have one crash after another across the United States. You'd lose 500,000 people immediately. Most people don't even think of that. Your cars, if they're newer cars, not some old car from 1960 or something, but in any newer car that has computer chips in it, they'd all fall. They'd all stop. Everything would stop. All the appliances in everyone's home would be wiped out immediately. Your plasma TV won't turn on. Nothing that has a chip will work. It's terrible. This is a devastating attack that I know you want to talk later about how we can protect ourselves. There are ways to protect America.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it doesn't look like a lot of the steps to protect us have really been taken. So in terms of, that's probably a good place to stop. Everyone stay with us. We're going to have more with Dr. Gerard Lamiro talking about the effects of an EMP. Stay with us. And we're back on the iSpy Radio Show. This is our Memorial Day weekend show, saluting our troops, but starting with Dr. Gerard Lamiro talking about some of the things our troops and leaders need to protect us from an EMP attack, electromagnetic pulse. And we've been talking about the effects of what an EMP would be. I got to tell you, that opening segment is pretty terrifying in terms of the widespread devastation that would be caused by an EMP. You talked about planes dropping from the sky, people driving along in their cars, and every system suddenly shuts down, and of course all the damage to our infrastructure, and this happens within seconds. Let's get a little more specifics from you, though, on what exactly this would look like. Would it shut down every single system out there, or are there some systems that could survive while others don't?
Well, there are some that may have some protection. There's something called the Faraday effect, similar to what happens with a car. When you're in a car with just a simple lightning bolt, you don't get struck by lightning, even if your car does, because of the Faraday cage effect that the electricity goes over the car. But unfortunately, a pulse attack is much stronger than a lightning bolt. And it's much more concentrated. And unfortunately, you've actually got to take steps to harden sites and to protect the electric grid and its infrastructure surrounding it. And so there are things you can do, and when you want to, we'll go into that. But right now, the threat is real. Russia and China, both known to have worked on such weapons before. There's a fractal bombardment system Russia has put out. There's also work that China has done, and that we know they have capability. And then in addition, we know that North Korea likely to do it. And we think that if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, they can do it as well. Yeah. And what I think is maybe something to be very concerned about is there's a secret Iranian military handbook that was translated by our military intelligence into English, and they found that the top military people in Iran have endorsed an EMP attack against the United States.
Yep.
So why would we possibly consider negotiating with them and letting them have a nuclear weapon so that those military people who've endorsed the EMP attack in America could actually have the weapon they need to put in their missiles? Very foolish. And by the way, the Iranian manual sites 20 different locations over the U.S. Yep. that they thought would be especially good targets to consider using this EMP attack against America.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to mention that. I've seen that report. In fact, we're going to put a number of articles up there on our website, iSpyRadio.com. And North Korea, apparently they purchased an EMP weaponry from Russia not too long ago. As you mentioned, China, a couple years ago, it came out that they were developing these kinds of weapons. And, of course, there's the Iranian report that you just mentioned. So this is not new technology. And as we said earlier, it was first discovered, this effect, back in the 50s and 60s during some of our atomic weapons testings. And but let me give you a scenario and have you comment on it. About 8 years ago, I wrote a screenplay about North Korea developing technology to generate small area, you know, like a mile or two in radius, EMP, shoulder fire type of weapons, because these could be more easily smuggled into the U.S. for tactical strikes. At the same time that I was writing that, I had seen a little film that the Defense Department had put out. It was the sense that it was one of their huge fears was not an ICBM from Russia or China, but a smaller surface-to-air type missile. The fear was is that you could have a rogue nation like North Korea firing an EMP missile off the deck of a tanker from international waters, which is only 24 miles from our shore. And a missile like Russia's S-300, the NATO calls them the S-23 Gladiators, that travels at nearly Mach 8 or 6,000 miles per hour. So fired from 25 miles out, reaching a height of 30 miles, which could extend an EMP bubble about 480 miles in all directions, that would take about 24 seconds to reach its target. And, oh, by the way, Russia just announced in mid-April 2015, a month ago, that they would export those very missiles to Iran once the 2010 ban was lifted. So what are your thoughts on that?
It's worrisome, very much so. And you described one particular scenario. I can describe a bunch of others. And unfortunately, they're all real. They all seem plausible. And in the hands of the wrong leaders in the wrong countries, they might actually be foolish enough to attempt an attack on the United States. And so I would say it's real. And it's important for us to take actions as soon as possible to protect our country. I mean, we're worried about small things a lot of times. This is a big thing that we need to take care of because we've never had this type of devastating attack against America. We've got to protect ourselves.
Well, and see, that's the thing is, I mean, given that this is a new technology, it begs the question, why haven't we seen an attack like this already? I mean, I understand why a country like China or Russia wouldn't want to do this because then it would mean all-out war. But I could certainly see a nation like Iran or certainly ISIS wouldn't think twice about this.
That's possible. Yeah, you know, they have less to lose.
I've got about a minute and a half here before I break. Paul Singer, who's a billionaire hedge fund manager with Elliott Management, said that an EMP pulse is the risk that stands way above the rest in terms of the scope of potential damage adjusted for the likelihood of occurrence. According to Singer, threats that would be easier to manage include nuclear war and an asteroid strike. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, and by the way, I've read that too, and so I know exactly what you're talking about. Absolutely. Our communications, our electronics, our banking, our transportation, refrigeration, food production and distribution, all probably would be largely wiped out if it's a major attack 200 miles over the U.S. Chaos and anarchy would be widespread. Tens of millions of people would die from lack of food and water. And then also people like diabetics and those who need critical medical supplies to stay alive just wouldn't have it. We're talking devastation beyond belief. And that's why we have to take action. We cannot allow this to continue to linger to get some nut in place who wants to launch an attack against the U.S. Yeah. We can do things. We can protect ourselves. We must do it. We must take action. I'm trying to assert this issue into the presidential campaign, trying to get them to all think about what they're going to do. And I've been told by a colleague, I was not at the Mike Huckabee announcement, but I was told that he mentioned EMP attacks in his announcement that he was running for president, and I'm glad he did, and I hope they all take it on.
Yeah, I certainly think that the potential for danger is higher than ever, especially given groups like ISIS out there. All right, let's go ahead and take a break right there. Everyone stay with us. We're going to have more with Dr. Gerard Lemiro talking about EMP, and then also we're going to be talking about what you can do. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. We are keeping an eye on big government. This is our Memorial Day weekend show, talking right now with Dr. Gerard Lemuro, always a great guest with great information. We're talking with him right now about the dangers of an EMP attack, one of the many dangers we face, and certainly one of the reasons why we need our military out there to defend us. And so we want to talk about now what we can be doing. You talked, you know, in that last segment, we were talking about that that article by Paul Singer, who's a billionaire hedge fund manager. You know, one of the real dangers here is that our entire economy, aside from the infrastructure end of things, our entire economy, not to mention our monetary policies and everyone's bank accounts, they're all electronic. So has the banking industry taken any steps to protect account information, or are they too worried about subprime mortgages and the like?
Well, there are some people and also some states that have taken some actions, but it's limited. And we still would have devastating attack, even if there are a few little islands here and there that withstood such an attack. Most of America would be damaged beyond belief. So what do I propose that we do? Well, number one, we don't allow Iran to get a nuclear weapon. Why you would allow a country whose military leaders endorse using a weapon against us is absolutely foolish. We should not be negotiating with them except to get them to protect Israel and do other things, but certainly not giving them a nuclear weapon under any circumstances. Number two, I think we should make EMP attacks a big issue in the United States today. It should be the number one national security issue today and throughout the presidential election coming up. The third thing is people ought to contact their House and Senate people and tell them, hey, it's time for action. The House passed at least three bills in recent years that would help to protect the United States against such an attack, and all three apparently were stalled in the Senate. No one would vote for it in the Senate, and I'm not sure if the president would have signed it either. Given his view on the military situation.
Well, you know, that just brings up an important point, is why would you not want to protect the American people? I mean, if this is a real threat, and we know that it is, why would you not want to take those steps?
Well, I think either the left in this country doesn't believe there's such a thing as threats, and they think that you can just talk away every problem, or they don't care. They're not looking for a strong country. They want us to be like everybody else and have one world government or something else that I can't explain, because it goes beyond my thinking to figure out how anybody would not want to protect America. By the way, I want to mention Arizona Representative Trent Franks is doing a lot of the leadership in the effort to protect America. You can also contact that representative and see how you can lend some support and encouraging House and Senate to take action. Another thing, the Boeing Corporation, some of our corporations, Boeing has an anti-shockwave laser weapons project that hopefully we think will absorb, deflect, and limit an EMP attack with its own plasma field of superheated air. Mm. I think we should be supporting projects like Boeing's anti-shockwave laser, and I think other weapons too. There's no reason why, given even the 10-second warning, we couldn't deploy some of those type laser weapons. Mm. Another thing that I want to mention that I think is important, NORAD's moving back into Cheyenne Mountain. Most people don't realize. They think of Cheyenne Mountain as impenetrable and everything else. That's true. It's a very good facility. But it's important to realize that NORAD was built to protect us against a missile launch, I think largely from the Arctic, from the northern side. So our northern flank is protected with certain types of protection devices and equipment. And unfortunately, Cheyenne Mountain is blind to a southern flank attack. So if somebody wanted to attack us from a southern direction, even Cheyenne Mountain wouldn't be able to pick it up. And Cheyenne Mountain needs to be retrofitted with a south-facing defense, a southern flank defense, and I think that's critical too.
Well, and then, you've got the attacks from the coast as well. We only got about 2 minutes here with you, and some of the congressional hearings that were out there talked about the need to harden the systems. And I don't think much has been happening on that. What exactly does that mean, harden the systems?
Well, basically, what you do is you use things like the Faraday cage effect on certain critical things, transformers, power stations, certain lines, certain places where there's a lot of concentration of electronics. you basically harden those facilities, just like Cheyenne Mountain was hardened, but maybe not quite as strongly as that. But you basically harden those facilities so if there were attack, nothing would happen. They'd keep functioning fine. And by the way, in Congress, the hearings and that, the thinking was that the $2 billion, which is petty cash in this government's budget, for $2 billion, they can harden the electric grid of the United States. Well, that's petty cash.
Yeah.
I mean, that's noise. That's the paperclip budget.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, and I personally think it will take more like $10 billion, but even $10 billion is a drop in the bucket. We need to spend that money. Congress has passed legislation in the House. The Senate should take it up. I don't know if they have to resubmit it because it's been a few years, but that legislation exists, programs exist, weapons like Boeing can be built. We need to take action today.
And then real quick, in about 30 seconds, what can individual people do? I've heard things like an old microwave can work as kind of a quasi Faraday cage. Any truth to that, or is that an urban myth?
What are you going to do? Put your
storing emergency radios, an emergency phone, those sort of things.
Well, I honestly don't know if a microwave could withstand a pulse. I haven't had any data in favor or against that theory. I would just say that that's small potatoes. I think people would best be protected by getting their House and Senate to take action. And we need to do that, make it an issue until America's protected.
Yeah, and absolutely. And of course, we're back again to elections have consequences. And I think conservatives are going to do far more for protecting America and increasing the budgets to build this kind of infrastructure than Democrats and Republicans or Democrats and progressives ever will. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
It's been great talking to you again, and I'd love to talk to you in the future.
And coming up next, best-selling author Scott McEwen. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We just finished talking with Dr. Gerard Lemuro about some pretty scary stuff, an EMP attack, and all the devastation that could cause. This is why we need heroes in America, the brave soldiers of our combat forces. And no better person to talk about that than best-selling author Scott McEwen. Scott, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to be on. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and if for some reason people don't know your name yet, I'd like to add that you're the co-author of American Sniper, that phenomenally successful movie that just came out, and you've got your own series of books, the Sniper Elite series, and the latest book on that is The Sniper and the Wolf, just came out last week, I think it was. And so, you know, I'm always curious, you know, as I spent 20 years as a developmental editor, and there's so many questions I can ask about how you go about writing this, but one of the things that's always I find very interesting anyway is the naming of the characters. And so Gil Shannon, he's your lead character, and you've said that he's a composite of people that you knew. But I'm real curious, how did you come up with the name for Gil?
You know, I think that I wanted to have a common Irish type name, and so. I just thought that, you know, somebody that's approachable, because most of these guys are from middle America, you know, from, you know, middle-class backgrounds. Most of the SEALs that I know that are successful out of kind of places like, you know, Missoula, Montana, and places like that, you know. So it's like I wanted to have somebody that was approachable and yet have a real kind of a typically Irish name.
You've said, too, that he's a composite of SEALs that you've known. So how much of him is Chris Kyle, you would say, you know, just percentage-wise?
You know, I'd say Chris, you know, made a huge impact on me as far as his skill set and his attitudes and everything else. So is there any way to put a percentage on that? No. You know, but he definitely made an impact. I would say the largest percentage that this guy is based on, as I put in my first book, Sniper Elite, on my trip with the guy that I met, you know, at a bar in Coronado called Danny. And the guy was SEAL team sniper, and the guy had been involved in a shootout with some Al-Qaeda guys and had been hit, you know, more than a dozen times in vital parts of his body. Survived and killed the four guys, the bad guys that he was after, before he was medevaced out of there. And that guy, when I met him, was kind of the epitome of the SEAL attitude of never quit and, you know, and they are just tougher than the other guys that are coming after him. And for that reason, I made him kind of the central piece of the ability of Gil Shannon to go on, notwithstanding injuries, being shot, whatever else. And a lot of people have said, oh, that's so crazy. You can't be shot that many times and keep on going. Well, let me tell you something. You can be shot that many times and keep on going. And I know people that have done it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's always amazing to read so many of your stories, because I know that, you know, having spoken with you in the past, I know that a lot of these events, they're based on real stuff, and that not only leads that, and not only lends a real sense of credibility to them, but it's just, again, you're just overwhelmed with the sense of what these guys go through. It's just so awe-inspiring.
Yeah, I mean, in The Sniper and the Wolf, there's a story of house of prostitution that is happened upon by Gil Shannon, and it was set in Turkey, but the real story that was based on was a house of prostitution that some bad guys were in that was in another country in the Middle East, and I'd rather not mention the country. It was never mentioned, but my guys that I know were there and rolled up a bad guy from the place and saw a bunch of 15, 16-year-old girls that had been virtually kidnapped that were being held there, and let's just say they burned it down, and they made sure that the place did not exist when they were found. And that kind of that attitude, that was the basis for that one chapter, was the story that was told to me by some guy who got extremely upset when they thought that they were still in the Middle East. Hmm. And these houses exist, and, you know, they're run by Russian mafia generally, and, you know, they're bad people out there that are dealing in, you know, in bad things. And, you know, one of the things I like about Gil Shannon is no matter where he's at, if he sees bad things going on, he's willing to take it on, irrespective of the mission. He's going to take that on right there.
Yeah, he really is an awesome character. I've really grown to like him an awful lot. But you mentioned the Russians there, and that kind of brings me into my next question here. Is in the book, you talk about the Russians and U.S. government working closely to fight essentially a common enemy, by sharing some resources and some personnel and whatnot. So is that something that you are either foreseeing coming down the road, or is that an arrangement that's really already occurring?
You know, I know it occurs. And, you know, although the Russians and our relationship has been somewhat strained, I guess, over the Crimea recently, you know, over the whole Ukrainian thing, still there's a common foe that both of us understand, and the Russians understand the Chechens and the Chechen terrorists much better than we do, even though we had a smattering of it, if you will, in the bombing of Boston and the death that took place there. The Russians have been dealing with the Chechens now for, you know, a generation, and they hit them many times, wiped out theaters with 200 people in them, schools, things of that nature. And a lot of people don't realize that the Chechen terrorists, you know, that part of Russia, really are the reason for a lot of very bad things that go on in the world, including the fact that when we go through these body detectors in airports, you could thank the Chechens for that.
Yeah,
or I should say the Chechen terrorists, you know, because they were sewing bombs inside women's breasts and to blow up in planes. This is a committed group.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why we chose Spetsnaz and their skill set to team up with the SEALs to go after these guys, because I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about these Chechens in the near term, and I don't expect it's going to be really good stuff.
No, can't imagine it would be. And like you said, very dedicated to their cause. All right, let's go ahead and take a break right there. Coming up, we'll get Scott's perspective on some recent events, ISIS, Benghazi, and the accusation by Seymour Hersh that the Osama bin Laden raid didn't happen the way that it's been reported. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is the I Spy Radio Show. It's our Memorial Day weekend show. We are celebrating the military, and one of the best people out there to do that is Scott McEwen, best-selling author, and all of his books really are about the heroism, the true heroism, exemplified all the time by our military here. And so, Scott, you've got this new book out here called The Sniper and the Wolf. I have read about 20 chapters into it. My producer read it all in one day. I purposely did not read the whole thing because I don't want to give away the ending. In fact, I've got some questions about that later on. But anyway, in the last segment, we were talking about how you tie a lot of the events within all of your books, not just this one, but you tie so many events to real life occurrences and whatnot. And so we know about the SEAL Team Black. And you had mentioned to us previously that this is, in fact, a real team. But in this one, you talk about the anti-terrorism response unit that answers only to the president. And recently, there was a special teams operation that staged an overnight ground raid in Syria, taking out a senior Islamic official and his wife. So do these kinds of teams that report only to the president, do you suspect that they exist in real life?
No, I don't think there's any doubt that they exist. The question is what agency, you know, kind of oversees them. And I know that the CIA has a certain group as well as the NSA. So I would suspect that the NSA would be the ones that would have direct oversight by the president.
Hmm. So speaking of some recent events, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. You got Pulitzer Prize winner journalist Seymour Hersh out there saying that the raid which killed Osama bin Laden back in 2011 is, quote, one big lie, and then not one word of the Obama administration's narrative on what happened is true. In his article, he claims that an official with Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence Agency tipped off the CIA to bin Laden's location for a $25 million reward, and that top Pakistani military leaders were informed of the mission in advance to capture or kill him within the country. And then, of course, O'Neill, who took credit for firing the shot that killed bin Laden, has said that story is full of lies, meaning that story of Seymour Hersh, full of lies. Pakistani government probably knew of his whereabouts but had no hand in the kill. So what's your comments on all of this?
My first comment is I tend more to believe Rob O'Neill than anybody from the agency or anybody else that comes out and makes comments on it. I mean, I know Rob is a legitimate operator. I mean, I know guys who know him personally, although I don't know Rob personally. And, you know, and they all speak extremely highly of Rob O'Neill. And for that reason, I would tend to believe anything that he says over any of the rest of the group, including the stuff that comes out of the administration. So, I mean, Rob has said that what Seymour Hersh talked about was just not accurate. I tend to believe Rob.
Yeah, I would too. You always take the word of the people that were there versus somebody that's being fed information for whatever reason. So then last week, of course, we've got the administration trying to tell news media not to show pictures of ISIS rolling through towns in big trucks and tanks and convoys, because they said that was not really accurate, and that they should instead be showing pictures of Toyotas sneaking through towns at night with their lights off. But then, of course, this week, Ramadi falls to ISIS. And from these news reports, ISIS seems to be taking over Iraq pretty much unchecked at this point. So what are your thoughts on Ramadi and where ISIS is? And are your sources telling you about strategies that could or would stop ISIS but are not being used?
Yeah, there are. And, you know, I think that this administration is in full-scale denial right now. And I think that the news reports from Ramadi, which, by the way, you know, a couple friends of Chris's died there, including Mark Lee, who was the first SEAL killed, you know, in Iraq, as well as, you know, Ryan Job was injured there. So those are two guys I want to remember, you know, especially on Memorial Day, that gave their lives in that town, and as well as many other Americans that gave their lives in defense in taking that town. You know, I think it's a very sad state of affairs that we have right now. This administration wants to try and cover up what is obvious, and that is that ISIS is, in fact, making material gains, not only, you know, in the Sunni Triangle, but really all over that country. And unfortunately, they have no plan. Just like we've seen in many other instances, they're kind of just shooting from the hip, and they really have no plan as to what they're going to do. They try and, you know, put out a press release that they, you know, that they hit one of the bad guys with Delta, which my hat's off to Delta and doing the job they did, but this is a cancer that you're not going to just be able to hit one cell of and kill the cancer. This thing is metastasized now to the point where we need to take direct and affirmative action to cut them off, not only, you know, not only with troops, but monetarily, et cetera, because they're feeding, you know, they're feeding off the money that they're getting from taking these different cities. And they're doing damage, man, when they get there. They are truly wiping out entire sectors of that country.
Yeah, and in terms of the administration's handling of this, I mean, it's more like trying to win the war through self-esteem than actual boots on the ground.
and how they can spin it. I mean, it's all about spin to them. It's not about reality. It's about spin. And, you know, that's really unfortunate, particularly where, you know, we've given so much blood and money, you know, and lives to do these things, and just to see it all disappear because of really bad decision-making, you know, not only in not getting the status of forces agreement, not leaving people there to stop this check, to check this onslaught of ISIS and this vacuum that was created when he did his little kumbaya, we're all friends now, we're going to leave, and what happens? The whole thing collapses.
Yeah. You know, you had a great timeline of the Benghazi attacks, and we'll make sure that we can put some links up to that. But anyway, Fox News just reported on May 18th that new documents revealed that the U.S. knew that weapons were being run between Benghazi and Syria. Documents prove that the Benghazi attack had been planned for at least 2 weeks in advance and was in response to a drone attack earlier that year that killed an al-Qaeda strategist, and also in memorial to the 9/11 attacks. And then you've got this interview, former CIA director Michael Morrell, I think it's actually Morrell, out there giving interviews on his new book, who's been implicated in the Libyan talking points, and he's out there saying there was no warning of the attack on the Benghazi compound. So here's another situation. And he's also out there saying that there was no evidence of the U.S. Running guns into Syria. So what are your thoughts on all of this?
I don't think there's any doubt they were running guns. And we put that in Eyes on Target, that there was substantial evidence they were running guns, including reports directly from DSS guys that were involved.
Yeah.
So I mean, the only real question in my mind at this juncture is, was the ambassador himself involved in running guns, which really kind of compromises our State Department to a point where, you know, they're becoming nothing more than, you know, agents of the CIA and exposing them to, you know, to such, you know, ire as we saw on that day. So there's no question that the United States, in my opinion, was in fact involved in running guns to Syria. The question is, how deeply involved was the State Department and, you know, Ambassador Stevens? I mean, that's really the only question that's left. Because right off the bat, we reported that was what was going on, and a lot of other people did as well, including Brandon Webb, a SEAL team friend of mine, whose best friend was, you know, was killed there, you know, in Doherty, you know, who was killed there, and, you know, and I knew Ty Woods, and everybody knew what they were doing, and they were running, you know, these guys weren't running the gun, but there were divisions of the Central Intelligence Agency that were, no doubt.
Mm. All right, let's go ahead and take our break there. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Scott McEwen, author of The Sniper and the Wolf. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now on the I Spy Radio Show, talking with author Scott McEwen. He's got a new book out, The Sniper and the Wolf. And I got one final question from that last segment there. So we're talking about the weapons being run from Benghazi to Syria. Do you think Hillary's going to survive all this?
You know, unfortunately, I think it's very obvious that she was involved. And I don't know why any of this is a surprise to anybody. What really is the biggest question that I have is, does anybody care anymore? I mean, one of the things that really bothers me is, even though we've seen this outright lying that is going on here by this administration, by her, by the State Department, just flat out feeding us a bunch of lies, does anybody really care in that Democratic Party anymore? I mean, that's really my question, because it seems to be so bad and so replete with this type of, you know, clear lies, but they still vote for these people.
Yeah.
And that's really the biggest part that bothers me is, will she survive it? I have no idea. I sure as hell hope this stuff she doesn't.
Yeah, I agree with you. And unfortunately, it is endemic, I think, right now to the whole Democrat Party. But I think the individual Democrats, I think more and more of those are starting to wake up on this. So before we let you go, you've got this new book out. Again, the title is The Sniper and the Wolf. And as I said earlier, I have not finished the book to avoid any chances of giving away the ending. But I do know that my producer, who read it cover to cover in one day, she said she's very mad at you for the ending, and talking with you a little bit before the show, she said she wants to kill you. So
yeah.
I'm really, that's really got my curiosity up now. So I'm, you know, obviously you've left things hanging here. And so is that effect of, I mean, is that the effect you're going for, to really piss people off?
No, I don't think so. I think what I was trying to do at the end was, you got to leave the audience wanting more. And I think that the best writers that I like to, fashion my style on, including Clancy and some of these other guys, always leave, you know, something that's open for the people to understand or see in the future. And thankfully, Simon & Schuster has ordered, you know, a fourth book. So
there will be
more answers. And, you know, I've recently become a big fan of Game of Thrones. I've really come to respect that writing because that guy definitely, you know, leaves things, you know, waiting for the next chapter. And, you know, I'd like to think that the same can be done with the Sniper Elite series. And you know, now that it's been picked up by Sony to be a movie series as well, yeah. I'm very pleased that people are interested in seeing what happens next.
And any news on the movie in terms of timelines? Do you have a better sense of when that's coming out?
It's looking really strong. I mean, we've got, you know, like I said before, the producer that did the Jason Bourne series, Kevin Mischer Films, and Sony wants to start, you know, we're on the script right now. Sheldon Turner, who did the last few X-Men, is the script writer. And then we've got a great director in Jean-Michel Serra, who did Nonstop with Liam Neeson, and really good action guys. So we've got the team just about together, and I'm really looking forward to this starting sometime, hopefully by the end of the summer.
Well, I certainly like the last two X-Men, so you've got a great screenwriter for that one. But in terms of timing, can you say, do you have any better idea actually when that's supposed to be released?
You know, the day that I'm going to predict L.A. when they're going to do something, or Hollywood when they're going to do something, is the day. You know, I'll be a much more financially stable than what I am right now.
Yeah, because like by then you'll be able to pick the lottery numbers straight out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Nobody knows. Nobody
knows. It being Memorial Day, we're getting down on our time here with you. So what are, in your opinion, what are some of the best ways that the everyday Joe on the street can really show their appreciation for the military?
You know, I like to think that, you know, that there's the things in the airports where you not only say, you know, thanks for your service, but, you know, you get up and you do something. You know, I like to, if I'm ever riding first class or I have something like that, I like to grab a guy at the back of the plane and move him up to first class and say, hey, take my seat, or someone like that, you know, just to show my appreciation for him. You know, it's the small things, you know, it's the mowing the lawn. It's taking care of the kids, picking them up from school for your neighbor who's got a husband or wife deployed. I like to think that those things mean as much as the big things, like the donations to the charities or any of the charity work that I do, for example, and trying to, you know, support different military charities. You know, but everybody can do something, and it doesn't have to be money out of your pocket. It can be just that gesture to help out, you know, or do something for somebody that's next door that needs some help. And, you know, and I like to think that that's as important as a nation as the bigger things that we might see on TV or the parades or things of that nature, which are all good and all justified and should happen. But, you know, I like to think that the day-to-day things are every bit as important.
And you mentioned some military charities that you work with. What are those?
Navy SEAL Foundation. I like them a lot. They're a great group. They get money to the people. You know, the different foundations that the EOD Warrior Foundation, which is the Explosive Ordnance Disposal Foundation, some of those guys are really messed up and really need help. You know, they've lost limbs because of getting rid of bombs and things of that nature. So those two, the EOD Foundation and the Navy SEAL Foundation, are two that I can bet, that I have vetted, that I speak very highly of. And, you know, if people are going to donate, I can definitely give my thumbs up to both of them.
Okay. All right. And we'll make sure that we get links from for both of those up on our website, iSpyRadio.com. Scott, as always, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you guys for having me on, and thanks for bringing the good word. And, you know, I'm hoping you're cleaning up my home state there, because it's time somebody did. It sounds like we need to get something cleaned up there, you know, as far as politically. Like, there's been some good inroads and cleaning some house, but you guys keep it up.
Well, that's right. It's a good start, but there is a long way to go for sure. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Scott's right. It is about getting better leaders, not just at the state, but also our federal leaders, too. We've heard today about the very real threat of an EMP attack, but we're more concerned about Amtrak and global warming than protecting our infrastructure against these kinds of attacks? Really? Clearly, we need better leaders on this. Check out this week's show page on iSpyRadio.com. That's show 521. If you're listening to this on the third-party archive, we'll have links to tips on protecting your home and family against these kinds of attacks, links to Dr. Lemiro's site and his books, and, of course, to Scott's books as well. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. Remember to thank our troops, and also remember that the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.